that? Three, okay. All right, so welcome to this panel on fear and innovation. I'm Ishita Gupta. Very happy to be with you guys. I know you had a choice for what panels to attend, so I'm grateful and honored you're willing to be here to learn all about fear and how to innovate. It's an important topic, isn't it? How fantastic has it been so far today? I have been blown away. Loved Hillary's, obviously. And I just, you know, in the morning during the panel that I moderated, we were talking about courage and risk. And the enthusiasm of the women here, I just thought, this is what we're hungry for. These are the topics: fear, overwhelm, business, trying to really understand and grapple with these issues. How can we do that? I'm incredibly excited to be here with you guys. So this is the Expert Exchange Series in Fear and Innovation. And just as the name suggests, I would invite you to use this session as your safe space. This is your place to essentially engage. So these sessions were designed so people could actually network and chat with speakers and without feeling intimidated. So I invite you all to, if you have a question, ask it. If you feel hesitant about sharing a story, don't worry, share it anyway. And just to engage and discuss with you all about this particular topic. Okay, our session's gonna be 60 minutes. Half of that is gonna be kind of me giving you a little bit of background in my story. And then essentially we'll just engage and we'll talk about largely these topics: risk, innovation, and how to actually do it. How does that sound? Anyone have any questions so far on logistics or anything? All right. For those of you guys in the back, come on up. Thank you. All right. So essentially the premise for this session is using our own needs and problems and challenges to really innovate. How many of you work for corporate America? Okay, pretty good majority. And how many of you are entrepreneurs or women in transition trying to build your own businesses? Okay, all right. So I'm an entrepreneur. I'll give you a little bit of background on my story. But largely, whether in corporate America or as an entrepreneur, innovation is a huge buzzword, is it not? It is like, let's innovate, innovation, innovation. We bang our heads against a wall. Or creativity, right? We gotta be creative. We have to create and innovate. So we will get into how to actually do that, why people go crazy bananas over innovation like they do over social media. We gotta have social media, right? And then talk about essentially how to do it, how you can do it in your own life. So my name is Ishita. I founded and published a magazine called Fearless. It's all about overcoming fear. So I've talked to business owners, entrepreneurs, artists, writers, all about overcoming fear. The handouts that you guys have in front of you are culled from my writing and essentially are rules to live by, hopefully, and to use in your work and your life. Don't look at them now. I could see all of you going there. Read them after. They're for you to take home and implement. And as I told my session this morning, the conference is here to inspire you, but really it's meant for you to take stuff home and implement. Because we can have all the inspiration in the world, but if we're not going to take action on it, it really means nothing. Yeah? So I founded and published this magazine. It's been 4 years running. I reach about 20,000 people online, 70% of whom are women. I worked with America's number one marketer. His name is Seth Godin, if any of you are in marketing, for about 4 years. I did an entrepreneurship. I guess I can call it an entrepreneurship program. It was called the Alternative MBA. Where he said, don't go to business school, learn entrepreneurship the real world style. So I did that. I stayed on with him, worked in publishing, launched 7 bestsellers, and then went on to found my own company, which helps women entrepreneurs and people in corporate America build businesses and learn confidence. So how to actually build confidence into your life or the business that you're building. Okay? So the reason they asked me to do this whole innovation thing, confidence and fear, is really my shtick. It is where I live. I live in the gray area of things that people are afraid to talk about. Fear, grief, loneliness, innovation, and really how to dig into these topics in a way where we're not ashamed, or we're not feeling guilty or bad or overwhelmed about these things. You know, none of us would raise our hands and say, yeah, I'm overwhelmed. And I mean, maybe in this environment we would, because we feel safe. But this is a topic that I thought, and I know women in particular are hungry for. So my story. So when I started actually working with Seth, it was like a tailor-made opportunity for me. It felt almost heaven sent, to be a bit dramatic, but it was perfect. It combined media, business, online world, and at the same time, it was one of the most terrifying experiences I had ever been through. It's like those times when you know when you get what you want and it is totally not what you expect, and shit hits the fan, excuse my French. It was one of those things that professionally I knew it would change my life and my career, and it did. It really and truly did, and it rocket propelled me to where I wanted to go. But how it happened was not how I pictured it at all. So picture Obama getting inaugurated, 2009, early 2009, and we started on that day. And it was amazing. We watched the inauguration, you know, our first day of work. And the way that it actually happened that I got in was he sent this blog post out and he said, if you could change your life, would you? And I was in a career at the time where I thought, actually, I would. And so I quit my job that day and applied to that program. And, you know, a month later, 25 of us went for an interview and 9 of us got in. So we started on Inauguration Day. And it was great. It was all things. We're happy. It was amazing that I had gotten this opportunity. And then when I got home, stuff hit the fan. I was like, what did I get myself into? It was America's literally number one marketer, 9 people who were brilliant, and you had to come to the table really operating at a really high level. And having no business and marketing experience, that was pretty terrifying. I had come from a background in medical school. Both my parents were doctors. Had no idea what I was doing. And fairly quickly realized that I felt overwhelmed, that word that we all throw around and in over my head. And so for a full year, it was crying every night. I lost 20 pounds, had to go to the doctors. It was crazy. It was like that feeling of, I have exactly what I want, and if this is it, I'm ready to throw in the towel. I was ready to quit a couple times. So one day, Seth walks in and says, get ready to start a business or a project. And I thought, start a business? Who knows how to do that? What does that even mean? And so I said, I'm going to start a project. And at the time, I was in so much fear that all I could do was want to get out of that feeling of fear for 1 second. So what did I do? I tried all my normal methods. I talked to my friends, my family. I tried to meditate. I walked. I listened to music. Nothing was working. I was still in an enormous amount of fear. Next best thing, I decided to start interviewing people. I thought to myself, if nothing is getting me out of this fear right now, how can I, as quickly as possible, stop feeling fear and learn from others? I'm the kind of woman that doesn't learn from platitudes. I don't learn from general advice. I learn from very specific people doing specific things and them saying, this works, this doesn't work. So I thought to myself, okay. And I started interviewing people. I didn't even really know what I was doing at the time. But I started talking to authors, friends, people who inspired me. And all about overcoming fear. Essentially, it was free therapy for 6 months. But that turned into, I interviewed for 1.5 years straight before I published anything publicly. And that now has turned into over 200 interviews with thought leaders, people who are big people in business and media and the arts. And people come up to me now and they say, well, how did you think of starting that? And why did you start that? And my answer to them is, I wasn't trying to start anything. I wasn't trying to build a huge asset. I wasn't trying to reach many people. I, for 3 seconds, wanted to stop feeling fear. So what does that really mean? I mean, innovation, when we talk about innovation means what? What does innovation mean? Anyone? Exactly, something new. It's a new or a different way of operating, or a new or better solution to an old problem. And this word new is something that I really like to focus on, because my old paradigms, my old solutions, my old methods were not working anymore. And there's a reason that they say necessity is the mother of invention. It's because when you start solving your own deepest needs and problems and challenges, that is when you are truly innovating. That's actually the real definition of innovation for me. Because when you are backed into a corner, when you have nowhere else to go, when you have no way out, or your old methods aren't working, what can you do? I mean, it was totally counterintuitive for me to start interviewing people to talk to them about overcoming fear. It sounds wild to me even now that that was even a move that I thought would be okay to make, but that was exactly what felt right in that moment to do. So to me, the first premise of all of this is that we are doing innovation wrong. We are seeking it externally in our companies, in our businesses, in our lives. We want to innovate, and we look here, and we look there, and we look to see how people are doing it, and we look to see what brands are doing it right. But the people and the brands that are doing it right are the ones who are solving their own deepest needs first. There is gold in your own experience. There is gold in your own issues and problems and challenges. And that, is the heart of where your particular innovation is going to come from. Even if you're doing it for your employer or your company or for your customers, or if you're an entrepreneur, if you're doing it for your own brand. So that's my first premise. It's pretty controversial. Innovation, we're doing innovation all wrong. So from that standpoint, I want to invite you guys now into discussion and ask you, where in your lives, and this is the mic, you guys have two mics, one at the front, one at the back, for you to engage. Where in your life have you totally bypassed your own story? Where have you totally bypassed a fear, a problem, a challenge, and said, there's nothing in that. I need to innovate. I need to be creative. I need balance. It's like a very elusive word, balance, right? What does that even mean? How do you feel it? What does it mean for you? What does innovation mean? So where in your life have you had moments like that, but that you've totally overlooked? Does that make sense? No, it doesn't make sense. Where in your life, either challenges, problems in your company, in your business, where you've thought, I just need to innovate. We really need to innovate our way out of this, is a term I hear a lot. No, not but you failed to overlook that and see it as a moment of innovation. What I'm trying to, explain or express is the, Yeah, exactly. I'm saying that we look to innovation as something external, something that we can do, something that, you know, someone has to tell us, change this solution. And oftentimes where it resides is in the stuff that you're running away from. Like an uncomfortable moment, a meeting where you haven't spoken up, a fear or a challenge or something that you're resisting. That is an opportunity for innovation. And that's where my opportunity came from. And in working in business and working in media, I've seen that happen 10 times over. Except what we do is we run from it because it's uncomfortable and because it's hard to manage. Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. Yeah, why don't we actually, if someone can take that mic and we'll just pass it around. I don't know if that's an option for us. It's attached. Okay. Well, try your best then. You'll get the spotlight.
Okay, I think I understand what you're asking, but if I'm off track, let me know. Long story short, I was home for, I had torn my rotator cuff and my bicep tendon, so I had 3 months of recovery. Working 27 years, I had never, ever taken that much time off in my life, not a maternity leave, anything like that. So I had all this time on my hands. What led to the fall and me, you know, having this 3 month period of time, my life was out of control. Mm. I was running around like a crazy woman, locking my keys in my car 3 times in a month, losing my phone, flooded my house twice, from the top floor to the basement. My children were telling me that I needed ADD medicine. Like, it was just out of control. So I wound up falling. And as I was going down the steps, I thought, I can't take all these people down in front of me. Let me grab onto this railing. In return, I tore my bicep tendon, blah, 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 and had the surgery. So I'm home, and I decide that I need to write a book about all the funny stories in my life that contributed to this moment where I decided to take a look at myself, slow down, find balance, take a look to see if maybe if I did have ADHD, if I was a little bit of a hypermaniac, if I could slow down, and if I could or couldn't, what was underlying, you know, what was the underlying piece there. So I had done a ton of work, and I decided, all right, now I'm ready to write the book, because people are going to think this is funny, you know, and what came of it was that I really needed to love myself enough that I could say no to things, I could slow down, people would wait for me, you know, that kind of thing. So I get it all together, I decide in my head, I'm writing the book, I'm doing it, I'm like, this is going to be so hilarious, it's going to be a movie. Like, I'm telling my husband he should pick his character, and, you know, and blah, blah, blah. So I sit down to write the book, and no one's home. I'm home by myself, and I can't do it. And I get up, and I'm, like, doing dishes, and then I'm like, let me do my little physical therapy, and I can't do it. I sit down again, back, forth, and I finally thought, like, I started to cry.
Okay, take your time.
I will. So I thought to myself, what are you afraid of? Like, what is it? And what I realized was, I thought, you know what? Why don't I just quantify this? So on a scale of 1 to 10, my heart was pounding, I'm, you know, bawling, and I'm like, okay, this is a 10. I cannot write this book. And then I just started to breathe and think, like, well, what's the worst thing that can happen to me? No one is even gonna see it but me. Like, I don't have to publish it. I don't have to do anything with it. But I think what I thought was, oh, my God, this is the story of my life. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was like, wow, you know what? I could probably look at this and just let it go and always tell people I had a movie idea, this and that, where I could actually sit down and write it. So I sat down. It did take me the full 3 months, and
that's
I wrote it.
That's such a fast amount of time to write a book. I work with authors. Well, that's crazy.
I just dictated it, and I hired a ghostwriter.
Perfect. You're smart.
Yeah. So by the end of the book, what I realized was I didn't feel worthy to write the book because I'd been dragging, like, so much stuff with me that I thought, gosh, you can't write a book. I failed English 3 times in high school. I was, you know, student council president, but did not graduate with my class because I failed English. Had to go to summer school. So who am I to write a book? But what I realized was stepping into that fear was the most liberating thing that I could have done. Since then, you know, my ghostwriter thinks, she's like, it could be a movie. It's funny. So I think that really, like, stepping into it is the hard part. Yeah. But it is so freeing. I feel like a shell or a wall, brick wall, is, you know, down, and I'm able to be me.
Congratulations.
So thank you.
Thank you for sharing. So first, I have a book recommendation. It's called The War of Art. It's all about resistance, particularly with writers. It's written by a man named Stephen Pressfield. He wrote The Legend of Bagger Vance, which was that crazy golf movie. And then he writes also novels on writing, which is silly. But it's a wonderful book. It's all about resistance. So anytime we have a dream, anytime we have a goal, anytime we want to, God, lace up our sneakers and work out, this voice of resistance comes in and screws it all up royally. I mean, there have been moments where I've put on my shoes and walked to the gym and walked right back. What is that? That's crazy. That's resistance. So that's a wonderful book. And the second thing is that as we grow in our dreams and our goals and what we want to accomplish, fear doesn't go away. That's the killer, is that it just gets bigger. And I don't mean to scare you, but it's almost like it's correlated to how much impact you want to have. And the people that I work with on a daily basis who do have enormous impact are the ones who, you know, the best-selling authors and the people who sell their companies. These are the people who know fear shows up. I mean, these are the ones who, even after 12 best-selling books, at the 13th, they're like, oh my God, I don't know how I'm going to do this, except they know their triggers and they know that fear is going to show up, likely even bigger than it had before. They just know how to manage it and work with it. And that's one of the biggest things I've learned by doing the magazine, is that no matter how big or successful you are, it's literally that fear is a constant. I like to say it has no demographic. It will always be there. So that's why we can't run. That's what my life's work is based on, not running from fear, because it will never, you can't outrun it, really. Thank you for that. Thank you for sharing that. It's incredibly vulnerable and open of you. Thank you. Anybody else on that one? An experience where you kind of thought, look, I'm throwing in the towel. And really that was where a fruitful period of time, I have gone through, we've all gone through ups and downs, right? But our rock bottom, I like to say, is what we can build on. And real leaders are the ones who aren't afraid of that, who aren't afraid to hit rock bottom. Who said it this morning? I think it was Judge Hatchett who made me cry. I was like, is Judge Hatchett making me cry right now? And how she said to write your own story when all of your pages are ripped and torn. I love that. Hi there.
Hi.
If you wouldn't mind introducing yourself too, I'd love to hear everyone.
I'm happy to. My name is Shannon Sennefelder, and I actually had a life-changing experience. For me, it was 100 years ago. So I was in a violent relationship, first love, high school. 4 years of trauma, drama, crazy. And one fateful night, after knowing what was coming and smelling the whiskey on his breath instead of the beer, I knew it was going to be a longer, heavier night. I was crouched on the floor in the bathroom, holding on to a clawfoot ice-cold tub, when I heard a ka-ch, big sound. And then felt the cold steel under my chin. And when he said to me that this is your fault, we can't keep doing it like this, and this is your fault, I was at the point where I just didn't care anymore. I had nothing left to give. And he said to me, don't make me do this, don't make me pull this trigger. And I opened my eyes and I looked at him and said, go ahead. And he did. I have a belief that by the grace of God, in that moment, the gun jammed and I was able to push him off of me and get out of there and run like hell down the street. Ironically, 2 weeks later, I went back because that was all that I knew. The cycle of abuse. What I know about fear is that even now, 100 years ago, for me it feels like, my abuser is since then deceased. When I'm around big men, I have a reaction. I have an awareness, a consciousness of that fear-based feeling. I know that I'm safe. I know that it's not him. I know that it's not real, except that for me it is. So I dance that dance. And what I now know, and I'm very proud of, is that that story for me 100 years ago has been the impetus to my own company, where I facilitate these types of trainings that you talk about, the fear-based, how can we work through, live through, and bypass, and we can't because it's fear is real, it's always there. And we do, and it's work every day. And it's constant. And, ironically, I do this in front of lots of women and men, and my heart's pounding now because I'm with my peers and it's a different conversation. So I get what you're saying. I live what you're saying, and I breathe this daily. And I'm relieved to know that we're beginning to make this more of a in our faces conversation, because the one challenge that my company has is, how do I promote trainings where we're going to talk about messy topics, we're going to turn down the lights and probably beat on the floor and go there with this awful stuff. You're like, yeah, I'll pass. Except that the other side of it is being able to live through, breathe through, and move past, and get up and go to the gym, or not, and get up and take a risk with a company or with a relationship or with a career. So I'm always looking for the answer, how can I get you to come without freaking you out? Because it's really stressful, but it's worth it. So I'm always looking for feedback as to how do you work with women and men, I would assume, assert that struggle with these fears. You're like, no, it's worth it. Come on.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for sharing that. It's incredibly brave to have an experience like that, and you're here now.
Absolutely.
Today. So you're here in a different way, in a different identity of yourself. So I applaud you for that. Secondly, running a company as you do is hard. We live in this gray area, right, of topics that are soft, although fear and confidence are probably the strongest topics that any of us need to learn how to deal with ever to run a successful business or work in corporate America. I think my only feedback really would be that it starts with you. You have to be the one to not be awkward or uncomfortable or in any way, shape, or form strange or weird about this topic. You are the safety for your clients, mm-hmm. for your trainings. Whenever you facilitate, it is calm. This is a safe space. It is, let me invite you to work on this topic together. It's being there in that mess with them, mm-hmm. without getting awkward. It's like money. Financial planners, the reason they exist, the reason they do well, is because people are so weird about money. We just get freaked out. We just get triggered. So a financial planner, you'll never hear them say, give me your money and we'll do this. You hear them talk like this. You hear them say, let's make some sound investments. Let's take some of this off your plate. Let's budget. They make people feel safe. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, my biggest feedback is if you can keep safety and remove any of the drama or the weirdness around a topic that already has a lot of drama associated with it. It's like fear. When I work with clients, particularly men, about fear, there's this trigger that comes up of that we shouldn't have to learn how to deal with fear because we should already know it. Or we should already, that person's confident because they were born with it. No, there's a system. There's a training. There's a process. Let's go through that. I'm with you through that. And this is a safe space in order to let out all the mess. Because you don't want to let it out, right, in regular life. That's why they're working with you. Mm-hmm. So that's my feedback. You be the message. Gandhi, live, be the message. I know he said be the change. Don't quote me on that.
No, that's okay. I can understand.
But you get me, right?
Absolutely.
That's terrible for my countrymen. So I think it really starts with you as the founder, as the creator of this company. But kudos to you. I think that's an enormous need for people, for women. So keep going.
Thank you.
Yeah,
appreciate
you're welcome.
That.
All right, I want to actually move to another topic, which is I like to call stopping the cycle of proving and starting the cycle of value. And what I mean by this is proving ourselves, feeling like we have all the answers, feeling like we are the smartest people in the room. Whether it's in a meeting, whether it's like, I think Madeleine Albright said this morning about how she was at the UN and she didn't want to speak. Whether it's in a forum like this, where you feel a modicum of hesitation when you speak. The reason that we live in fear when we're in our work environments or as professionals is because we're constantly, even subconsciously, trying to prove ourselves when we speak. We're trying to get it right every single time in the meeting, in the boardroom. And I can't speak for men, but I work with a lot of them, and they don't do that. Yes, they have the sensor going too, but women have it on like high alert. It is like our, what is that, odometer, speedometer? That needle is constantly moving. And so we need to get out of the cycle of proving and get into the cycle of value. What do I mean by value? I mean, you are at the table for a reason. You are at the conference for a reason. They have hired you for a reason. And all you have to do is show up and do the best you can. Maya Angelou, I'm going to get this right, says, okay, I'm gonna give you guys a safe environment right now. Don't get weirded out by the mouse. Don't worry. Okay, all right. Everybody just put your feet up on your chair. No worries. He's not gonna get you. He's afraid of you. Maybe he's listening to our topic on fear and listening to all of this, and he had the guts to come out. Okay, go ahead, guys, calm. Just move over to this side if he's on that side. All right. He's more scared of you than you are of him. Maya Angelou, okay. If I butcher it, don't kill me. Just tell me the right way to say it. When you know better, do better, right? When you don't know anything, do what you can. And when you know better, do better. It's like that with value. You know what you know. Show up to the table being present. Whenever we are in meetings, whenever we have conference calls, whenever we're with clients, it's like we're not present. We just have this voice that's going on and judging everything that comes out of our mouth. Like everything stupid is said because of us. Whereas if you're just present and you show up and say, I'm going to help this person as best as I can, I'm going to deliver as much value as I can, your present. Presence involves active listening. Presence involves not preempting what you're going to say, what the other person is going to say. That's where your solutions for whomever you're trying to prove to are going to come from. It's from presence, not feeling fearful or intimidated. So that's what I mean by proving versus just being of value. I just want to see if I missed anything. And essentially what it's allowing you to do is what? It's allowing you to relax into your situation, right? And what do we do when we're nervous, when we're not relaxed? Our hands get sweaty, our heart speeds up, our tone gets 10 times higher, we speak fast, that comes off as crazy making, then people call you emotional or sensitive, or you feel like you didn't show up as well as you could have. So from here on out, whenever you have a meeting, whenever you have a big presentation, whenever you're working with a client, or just practice even when you're with your friends and family, are you trying to show up as the smartest person in the room and have everything figured out all the time? Because if you are, that's a surefire template for constantly living in this intimidation. It's not going to allow the people around you to see who you really are. And I work with a lot of people, particularly a lot of women, on this particular topic, especially those in corporate America. So I want to hear from you guys when you've either felt or perhaps silenced, censored yourself because of this cycle of proving, because you were trying to prove. No one wants to stand up for this one? Surprise, surprise.
Hello.
Hi.
My name is Inez. As soon as you said that, I was like, oh my gosh, you have to go to the microphone. So the thing I will talk about is, so I've always been kind of someone who didn't really have to try very hard academically. High school, middle school, I've always just kind of been able to just get A's and move through. And so I went to college and I was very involved in student government and different organizations and graduated cum laude. So for grad school, I decided to go to Penn. And initially when I applied to Penn, I did not even realize it was an Ivy League school. It was just the only school that had my master's program, which was computer graphics and game technology. And so I get to school and my orientation program, of course, there's no one who looks like me there. And I actually was asked, are you sure you're in the right place? I'm like, yeah, this is where I'm supposed to be. And excited about being at Penn, excited about being in Philly. And over the course of the next year and a half, I feel like my confidence academically tanked. It was kind of like, I thought I was smart, but these people are really smart. Like they're at a whole nother level of smart. And so I think as a result of that 2 years, it almost got me questioning a lot of other areas.
Of yourself?
Exactly, of myself. Like, were you really as good as you thought you were, or was it because you weren't really around the people who were really good at it, you know? So I feel like I'm in a space now where I question or I hesitate to speak up because I was reading, I'm listening to Lean In.
Oh.
yeah. And one of the things that really resonated with me was how we as women don't speak up because we don't want to be uncovered as the fraud in the room. And so when I heard that, I was like, oh my God, I'm doing that so much more now. I've never done that in my life. But ever since grad school, I feel like I do that all the time, whether it be in church, whether it be with my friends, whether it's at work. So when you said that about proving yourself, I realized that that's something that is very much a deep-rooted reason or source of a lot of my fear, mm-hmm. is not feeling like I have something of value to contribute. And being fearful that if I'm contributing something, other people are not seeing it as valuable or possibly judging that situation. So that's definitely something that I'm working on, which is why I'm standing at this microphone right now. I'm here.
First step. Thank you. You just took the first step. We all think you're incredibly intelligent. Second thing is, live in reality. You got accepted to Penn. These are external validation. There you go. Your external validation right now is saying, hey, you got into Penn. You're in graduate school. I didn't go to graduate school. You what? Congratulations. So right now, reality is telling you, Ines, look, we're accepting you. You're showing up. You're worthy. You have value. And right now, it's just your own perceptions of yourself that are keeping you locked up. I don't mean to sound harsh. I love you. I love the fact that you're going to Penn and doing your thing. There's a wonderful book, Self-Reliance, Ralph Waldo Emerson. I read it every week. It's very short, and it is one of the best books about trusting yourself, trusting your intuition, and knowing that your voice has value, means something. Please read that. It's going to be a wonderful, wonderful read, I think, at this stage in your life. But you're doing it. You're rocking out. Keep going. You have a voice. You have a beautiful voice. A lot of people are afraid to get up and speak. Keep going. Okay? Yeah, thank you. All right. Yeah, please come up. Yeah.
Good afternoon, everybody. So this is one of my biggest fears, speaking in front of a room of people, but this topic definitely resonates with me because I'm at the intersection of my life where I realize that the challenges I've had around these topics have been because I've tried to keep two very separate parts of myself, or so I thought, separate. I had a career, and I saw myself as career woman, but felt that that wouldn't include discussions about my family. And I'm a parent. I'm a proud mother of two wonderful emerging men, 11 and 2. And a couple of days ago, I was talking to my two-year-old because he didn't want to go into his room. And he said, no, the monsters are in there. And as calm as mom could be, no, there are no monsters. We keep a bottle of spray in the bathroom. It's just water. It's the monster spray. And I thought about the fact that I was having this really calm conversation with my son about a very scary topic. Yet earlier that day, I was in a room where I knew enough about a topic, and people were talking about the monsters, the challenges that we were facing, and I said nothing. Mm. And so I don't know what I want to share from this, but for me, it's just a realization that sometimes there are two sides of that same fear. With my family, I'm what you have, so I'm the content expert. Mom knows about monsters. know how Elma was made, and I'm confident with that. But in so many situations where I do have value and I have been the voice of people that weren't in the room, I have actively chosen not to speak up. And so I think my challenge in just coming here, thank you for this topic, is just realizing to ways to maybe blend those a little bit more together and just realize, like you said, I'm what you've got. You selected me for the job.
Mm-hmm.
I was selected to be your mother, and this is the discussion that I need to have. So for what it's worth, I just thought I'd share that. Thank you.
Thank you. I love that. Why don't you have a water bottle spray in your office for any time those voices get in? We should do that. Anytime those godforsaken voices start, don't say anything. You're not good enough. You'll sound stupid. All the. And honestly, own your momminess in your work environment. Step into your mom power. You could lift a car for those kids. Do it in the work environment. Just put on that hat. People are like, well, how do you operate in a male-dominated environment? I don't feel like that when I'm in there. I'm like, wow, these are all my best friends. These are my women friends. That's how you have to feel about it. You have to feel and walk in there, because it's hard to get power when you're in there already, I think. If you're already feeling intimidated, if you're already inside the boardroom, it's hard to generate that power. What I do, I'll fill you in on a little secret. I wasn't intending on doing this. I have a power move. There's a TED Talk about it, Amy Cuddy. She's, you guys have seen it? It's on confidence and body language. She says, do a power move. So she does this for 2 minutes in the mirror before anything important. She stands,
like Shira, you know, with your legs apart, and you're just like, you have like a affirmation that you say. I say, Ishita, I am the boss. That's what I say. I have it on an index card in my office. And anytime I have big meetings, anytime I'm having a male-dominated meeting, I look at that card and I say, it's up to you. I know these are silly tools, but they are so critical. They're so critical. So I have my index card of like, you know, 3 or 4 affirmations, and I do my power move. And I have to say, it sounds ridiculous, but it makes a world of difference before you walk in. Because people feel the energy before, right? They feel as soon as you walk in. So what can you do to generate this feeling of empowerment, of leadership, of confidence in yourself before you walk in? Try the power move. It's silly. You'll feel awkward. Do it anyway. It's a good thing to try. So thank you for sharing that. All right. Yeah, please.
I actually just wanted to share in response to Inez. So I was at a retreat not too long ago with a number of senior vice presidents. And one of them actually stood up, who's a man I admire quite a bit, and said that he actually feels like a fraud and that he's relying on everyone else to help him. And what I noticed that he does is he makes it a point to help others and make room in the conversation for other people. And by doing that and helping other people, he gets it back himself. And I thought that was really powerful to have somebody in this position say that he walks into work every day going, you know, how did I get this job? Am I actually going to fall on my face today?
Mm.
But I think his strategy is to make room for everybody to come into the conversation. And he's done it for me in a number of places where you're trying to get your voice heard. But you know, he'll go, you know, wait a minute. I think I hear some points that have to come out on the table. So I just thought I would add that sometimes just helping somebody else is helps you to do that.
That's awesome. That's great. Holding space for other people at a table, in a boardroom, on a call is always, always, I think, appreciated. I think especially for team dynamics. I knew a drummer who used to get extremely nervous. He's in the music industry. Before he went out, he would get so nervous that his hands would sweat, which kind of, you know, you're as a drummer, it's a little bit of a hard situation if your hands are wet and sweaty. And so what he used to do was help someone else who used to feel afraid, stage fright, intimidation, whatever. He used to go and help them for like 15 minutes before he went on. And it literally erased his fears, because you're being of contribution, you're being of service. See, a lot of times when we get nervous, thank you, it's because we're in our own heads and we're focused on ourselves. So my mentor, whenever I'm public speaking, and I do it a lot, So it's less nerve-wracking now, but don't get me wrong, it's still always a little bit, you know, terrifying. He says, the one thing that you should focus on is giving love to the audience. And this guy is a crazy public speaker. He's been on TED. He's amazing. And so for hearing this advice from him, give love to the audience, it felt a little bit odd. It felt a little woo-woo because he's a business guy. But I thought, that's interesting. What he means is take the focus off of yourself and put it on someone else. When you are literally in the space of, how can I be of value to you? How can I help? You're not in your own head of, do I sound stupid? So even if I make a mistake up here, it really doesn't faze me. It doesn't matter, because what's topmost of mind is what's happening. What is it useful? Is it valuable? Am I helping? Am I of contribution? Does that make sense? Yeah? I think you had something to share in the back. Yeah.
Yeah, my name is Kim, and I wanted to talk just about being good enough, which kind of helps overcome your fear. I'm A-type personality, and I don't like to do anything unless it's perfect. So
welcome to the club.
When things aren't perfect, you don't do a lot. And as I was a young woman in the Justice Department, and then I got to a big law firm, and I was given a file to say, you know, you go to court today, and don't worry, you know, there's several co-defendants, and you go over there, and you'll have one little witness, and everything will be good. You know, I went over, and I had co-defendants, and they were going to help me out and everything, and I'm a little outlaw, and I was ready to go. We broke for the day, and the next morning I came back in and looked at my counsel table, and I was the only one left. So I now had to run a jury trial as me, you know. One gentleman was nice enough. He knew I was, like, the shit was hitting the fan for me. He showed up in the courtroom and gave me his notes. But I was in front of a jury reading somebody else's notes, looking pretty much like an idiot. You know, I wasn't good that day. I wasn't polished. I wasn't clever. I wasn't perfect. And I was good enough. You know, and the jury came back with a verdict for me. I could stand up in front of the jury trial, and I had hives. I had to take my pantyhose off. I had, like, hives in my lips. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I could be self-deprecating before a jury and say, this is my first trial, bear with me. And luckily, like, the facts were on my side, and, you know, I won the case with my client, and I can kind of still Google Earth myself, to use somebody's phrase from this morning, when things are looking kind of shabby, to say, look, you did it before. It was kind of ugly, but you were good enough. And
I don't
think
get
that
it,
broke through the fear of, you know, what's going to happen next time.
Can you explain Google Earth to me? What does that mean?
There was somebody this morning, one of the panels, would said, you know, you have to take a moment. You've got to step back when you're in this mode in your head and kind of fly over yourself and look down and do a little evaluation.
Bird's eye perspective of
right.
The mess up. Got
That's
it.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So it was a good little tip, and it was sort of a liberating moment.
Thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
It sounds liberating. I'm sharing it with you right now. I couldn't do that in a jury, that's for sure. When people are literally judging you, sorry, don't sign me up for that. thank you guys. I think we have how much time, Deanna? 5 minutes left. Those are literally the questions that I have for you guys. You guys have been really amazing and honest. And real, right? I think that's what this conference is all about, what you have. I gave you guys, I don't have my handouts, but one should be a manifesto. Essentially, it's about starting. I just want you guys, whatever you're working on, if it's a half-written blog post, if it's a project, if it's a new proposal, if it's something in your business, if it's having a hard conversation with your partner or your boss, just start and do it. The sooner that you do that and work with your fears, the easier and the better it's going to feel. And the second handout you have is Lessons in Self-Reliance. Yes. So these are both called from the magazine. And it's essentially just life lessons. So things that I've used for my business professionally and also personally, because largely those two meld now, right? For women who are having lifestyle and work, we want those two to meld. So that's just a little template for how I work. And I have my email down there. If you guys have any questions, please email me. Confidence, business foundations. I'd love to hear from you. So thank you guys for showing up here and being so attentive and wrapped in this. Thank you.